Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together. All right, so today's episode is going to be a little different. And I say that because I just did a reading with Kate Van Horn. Now, I've seen a ton of my friends do readings with her. She does tarot readings and sort of just like walks you through sort of life a little bit in like a very validating and cool way. I've never done anything like this before. So I just finished my reading and I think we'll dive into a little bit about that, but I'm excited to welcome Kate Van Horn. She is somebody who is used to sort of help people rewrite their narratives, find their purpose, pursue it with confidence, help them fall in love with their own mind, body, spirit, looking for a grounding approach to connect to their intuition, and just for anybody looking to be seen, heard, and heart-led, which is all things that come from her website, katevanhorn.com. And I'm excited to bring her on the show, talk about how she got into this work, why it's so important to her, and we'll take it from there. So please welcome Kate Van Horn. All right, so we've literally had 10 minutes between a reading into a podcast, so like my emotions are still a little high, and so I'm excited for you to sort of take the reins a little bit. Tell us who you are and the work that you do, and basically bring us through the story of how you got into it in the first place.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. So we did do a reading right before this. I'm a psychic reader and tarot reader. I'm also the author of The Inner Tarot. And I originally found this work through my own healing journey. It was never intended to be something that I make my career or my life's, you know, purpose by any means. It was literally just to ground myself and ground my body during hard, difficult chapters. I was moving through, I was in recovery for an eating disorder. I was overcoming a recent PTSD diagnosis. So I was kind of sitting with and understanding what it means to have gone through that trauma and really like using spiritual practices like tarot cards to rewrite my own story. So that was the entire basis of what drew me to the cards themselves and to psychic work, was this idea that I could free myself of some of the heaviness and the weight of what my body was carrying and how it was manifesting into my anxiety, depression, panic attacks, all of this like intensity. I wanted to funnel into something that felt more sacred, more faith-driven, and more creative. So I would like pull cards and journal and learn how to intuitively move my body so that I could surrender a bit to what my story held previously and start to come up with like a new narrative for myself. So the book that I wrote and the work that I do is really meant to restate our own story, you know, and find a way to say it in a way that feels more truthful, more pure. And I think a lot of that is what led me to become more intuitive and in sync with my psychic gifts, was just accepting the flaws and accepting the imperfections. So that's a really bold, big way to start the podcast episode, but that's where I am. And that's what led me to kind of do the work that I do.
Now, before we started recording this, I sort of said to you, you know, I don't know what I believe. I know a lot of listeners have heard me say things like this before. I don't know what I believe in terms of a lot of these things, but I do know that there is something, like when my aura has been read, I've learned something, or something's been said to me. Like my recent aura reading was about, it was like at an event. It was at a Knicks event, actually. And they, yeah. And there was somebody there who did it. And I was like, whatever, this is silly, but I'm going to go and do the thing. And it takes a picture and it like shows you your like glowing colors. And she sort of walks you through these things. And she said like five words of something around this blockage that I had in communication and feeling really blocked. And I just like burst into tears, because regardless of if it's real or not, it seems so secondary to this. Just validated something that I really needed to address that I think I've been running away from. And that's sort of like during the reading that you did with me, there was a lot of that too, where it was like, I came into it a little bit nervous. Like, am I going to be told something that I don't want to hear? But instead it was just like a lot of validating what I knew and a lot of validating what I like how to push through. And it's like honestly like a lot of beauty, and it made me sort of like, when we started this, I was like, okay, now's a great time to tell you, now that we're done the reading, now's a great time to tell you I'm a bit of a skeptic, but also that I don't know that it matters anymore, because no. Whatever that was just helped me. And I think that that's such a beautiful thing in life, and in the risk of faith in things, and in the risk of knowing that we don't know, is sort of that tapping into the unknown and allowing ourselves to journey through questions. And even as a skeptic, to journey through the question marks, or allowing ourselves to be validated in certain areas. How have you sort of worked with people who do have that skepticism or are very resistant to it because of that? And why is it so secondary to sort of what you do?
So it's interesting, because I find the skepticism is really actually beautiful, in my opinion. It shows that you are keeping boundaries and maintaining some spiritual safety, some distance from something. And I think that's a really beautiful way to move about life, you know, protecting yourself. And so I really validate that that's not only normal, but I actually appreciate that they're coming with a bit of that. And I like to tell my clients and the people I work with that a reading should not shock you. Mm-hmm. I really think that a reading should not blow your mind in a way that's like, I can't believe this is going to happen, or I can't believe that that's what came through. Because we know ourselves more than we give ourselves credit for. We know ourselves really well. We're very intimate with the connection between our mind, body, and spirit. And to have someone come in and see that and validate for us what we already know, I think is a much more powerful experience, number one. So it's how I, you know, with tarot in general too, the reason I wrote the book was I wanted it to be a more empowered approach to using these cards, because there's so much of this doom and gloom and skepticism of like how witchy it's going to be, or how out there it's going to be. And it's actually one of the most like easy, soft, simple practices if we allow it to be. So what I like to say is like, please bring your skepticism. To me, that reads as divine protection, care for yourself. You know, I just rewrite it as, it's not you putting up blockages or barriers. It's you knowing how sacred your energy is. So wanting to be mindful of like not exposing that too soon, or opening it to something that's not going to be supportive for you. It's a little bit of a reframe.
It's interesting, because you're right. I think we do know ourselves very well. And I've talked about this before, but when I was considering, or like going through the muddy decision of whether or not to split from my ex-husband, and like it was this ongoing thing, right? It was like this constant presence in my brain, and it was like that for years. And it was interesting when we actually did split, there was such a peace about it, because it was like the decision had already been made. It was just the activation was almost calming. And so many people will DM me and go, how did you know? How did you know when like to leave, or how did you know to leave? How did you know, like, if you should, you know, all of these secondary questions. And I just remember being that person and being like, you already know, like, I can't tell it to you, but you're just like, I know that feeling of like, I have a gut
and I'm having a hard time trusting it. I need somebody else to validate it for me. And the moment of like stepping into whatever it is, you just, everything comes very clearly all of a sudden where you're like, oh, I knew this 3 years ago and it's okay that it took me all of this time. And I felt that a little bit during our reading because you were bringing up things that I've been sort of working through. And it's like just more so validating that struggle, but also that rebuild. We were talking a lot about, like, I'm just going to out some of the things we talked about.
Yeah, feel free.
One of the things that we talked about was a lot of this shift, this like massive shift, and sort of both our home, we're going through a renovation, and me also using that as like a metaphor and a witness to what I will go through, which is sort of like this rebuild, which is something I've been like, everyone knows that listens to the podcast, I'm so emotional about it because it's like this last year has been so hard and I'm so ready for it. And I felt it was so beautiful when you were like, this is like so important. Like this, what did I write down? This disruption is going to be like so important because come halfway through the year, it's going to be like joy and it's going to be all those things. And it's like, we go through these things time and time again in our lives where we're faced with like big decisions and we don't know what to do. And that can really stall us. It can keep us in jobs. It can keep us in relationships. It can keep us from doing the thing that we really want to do. And sometimes somebody just saying like, yeah, it's going to get real. It's going to get messy.
Yeah.
And then it's going to get back together.
We're going to kick the dust up.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
And then it's going to come back together. And I'm going to have to live through that metaphorically and physically. Yeah. And I thought that that was like a really beautiful thing. And then, yeah, you actually went into doing a little bit of reading around the kids. And I was so impressed with how much you picked up on their energies.
Their
personalities. Yeah, like so much. And I was like, that was very validating for me because I think that's the other thing. As parents, you feel so stuck on like, am I doing a good job? Am I doing enough? Are they okay?
You're doing an incredible job. You're doing an incredible job. And I love what you mentioned too about like sometimes your body just knows and it doesn't make it any easier. You know, the changes,
no.
The disruption, it's still dysregulating. But in the case of, you know, when it's time to leave a difficult relationship, when it's time to get off our ass and do the hard thing,
yes.
It's like we just know and our body speaks to us. And I really, within my work, my book, with what I talk about online, it's like everything's actually rooted in body work because for me, like my journey was I fell out of touch with my body at a very young age because of trauma I experienced as a child. And that manifested into the disordered eating and the dysregulation of like just kind of self-hatred, honestly, if I could name it. And just feeling like I was shaming my body all the time. Fast forward, I see my most sincere spiritual connection is with my own physical shape and form and the way that I choose to show up each day, the decisions I make, the way that I make choices, the way that I move through life, because that's what we have. This is the container
yeah.
we have. And I think when it comes to like, oh, should I have made a change sooner? Or why did it take me so long? We can stay in that shame cycle forever, but you have to trust that your body knows when it's time and your body knows when it's going to carry you. So those types of confirmations externally are just supporting everything that we know internally. And to your point, like it does get messy sometimes before it cleans up.
This weekend, I was grocery shopping with my husband and I picked up this giant bag of prunes and he looked at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, listen, I know I always get them in small little bags. I just want to know where these are from because California prunes are the premium quality prunes. And I just want to make sure that I'm like knowing what's up because California prunes are truly an under the radar superfood. You may not know this, but they're richly packed with antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, and support bone, heart, and gut health. And they just boost your overall immunity. So when you're picking up prunes or looking at them, you're going to look for ones that say product of USA or product of California on the packaging, just like I did this weekend. And if you're looking for different ways to use them, I got you. You can use them in baked goods. You can use them in sauce. You can use them in baking as a sugar and butter substitute for natural sweetness and a creamy texture. You can pop them in your smoothies. That's my favorite. And or just have them as a snack. So what's really great about them is a serving of prunes, which is about 4 to 5 prunes, is packed with 3 grams of both soluble and insoluble fiber, which collectively promotes healthy gut bacteria, which we know and love. And so for more information, you can go to californiaprunes.ca. You're going to find info, recipes, and nutritional facts. That's californiaprunes.ca. And next time you're in the aisle and you see that bag, I want you to pick it up. I want you to see if it is a product of the USA or a product of California. Check out if those are California prunes. Let's get back to the show. How would you, as somebody who sort of like does this as a practice and a work, I'm somebody who has a lot of anxiety. So gut feeling isn't always a trustworthy source because gut feeling can sometimes feel catastrophic. How do you sort of experience discerning between that gut feeling that feels like catastrophe versus gut feeling that's really pushing you into a discomfort or something that you need to do? Because I find I really struggle with that. I work with this life coach and she very much was like, I need you to start reframing what if all the bad things happen and with what if good things happen. It's such a simple thing, but it's a very challenging thought. And now there's a lot of studies coming out around, you know, our belief systems in ourselves and the way that we look in the world, the way we look at our homes, the way that we look at mess, the way that we look at disruptions, and how that can actually be so important in terms of like how we mentally cope moving forward. And then for others, I mean, especially if you've gone through trauma and stuff, it can be very difficult to work through things like that. I sort of would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I do get that question a lot. Like, is it anxiety or is it intuition? Because people don't know which one to trust. And I think one feels more uncomfortable. Anxiety feels more physically uncomfortable to me. It feels, you know, very like you can feel the tension in your throat or the tightness in your chest. Intuition, even if it's not the clarity you were hoping for, even if the confirmation you're picking up on is not the best, you know, choice or experience, it still feels more peaceful, you know? So I think slowing down enough to read the cues and the signs from your own energy of like, okay. So for me, for example, like when my anxiety is present, it's more in my gut. If I'm feeling something more expansive in my chest, even if it is a little like, you know, kind of picks up energetically, it's a little more fluttery, so to speak, that feels more intuitive to me. So it's starting to discern like even the parts of yourself that are speaking are really important because everything can be happening at once. And I think also grounding, learning what it means to ground before asking yourself that type of question or seeking that type of clarity so that you can be present enough to accept whatever comes through. So my short answer is I think anxiety feels more inherently uncomfortable and intuition feels more like a peaceful wave of, okay, yes, it's like an exhale. And to get to want, sometimes you have to move past the anxiety and sit in it fully, let it move through like a wave for that second stage of confirmation to happen.
Yeah.
Because the fears pick up and we want to run the opposite way. Our trauma response is like fight or flight. And sometimes we need to let the completeness of the feeling pass first. And I think that's the hardest part, the challenge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've experienced PTSD. There is this part of you that wants so badly just to shove it away into a little corner of your brain. And I had to learn the hard way too, that it'll pop up. It'll come up in other ways. It'll bubble to the surface when it decides to, and it can come when you least expect it. I found it was really difficult that when my life actually started to feel safe and balanced and all these things, all of a sudden, all of the past mess started to show itself. And that was like very frustrating because I was like, no, I already did the hard stuff. But it also took me a really long time to trust in my own voice. And I've lost that a little bit in the last while, I feel. And we talked about that in my reading. But one thing that I experienced years ago is like really trying to listen to my thoughts and pay attention. With your work and like your advice for people just sort of tapping into their intuition, what advice do you give for people to tap into that and start discerning between, you know, the anxiety and the bad gut feelings versus, you know, I love the analogy of like the top of the roller coaster and the fact that our brain registers fear and excitement the exact same way at the top. And you have to know which one it is because you are afraid, but you are also excited, but you got on the ride for a reason because you tapped in for the joy. And sometimes when I'm like having moments of like, this is really stressful or I'm really anxious. It's like, it's because I care. I'm actually excited. Like I've worked through discerning that a little bit more. The day-to-day, not as much. So what is like your advice for, is that something that maybe we work through in the book in terms of like finding our, in like tapping into our own intuition, especially when it's so easy to, one, numb out on substance or on phones or whatever, or two, it's so easy to just be so busy that paying attention feels impossible sometimes.
It is. It is. So some of the practices I love and what I talk about in the book is, so two things. One is somatic movement, moving without any specific purpose, just to get, you know, kind of into the body, shake the body, move the body, see what comes through as a result of that. The second is channeled writing. So channeled writing or automatic writing is, in my opinion, like a channeled state that we access when we just start to free write and really let everything come through in a really raw way. It can be messy. The words can be unclear. It doesn't even have to be coherent, but see what is at the bottom of that, at the root of that writing or that movement practice. I know I've, you know, put on music and just kind of like danced and all of a sudden I'm crying, you know, like just, I access something. And I think that those types of practices where you go in with no expectation of what it needs to look like could even be prayer or meditation if that resonates, mm-hmm. sitting with and just seeing what comes up for you and comes through for you. I think we're so rooted in this belief that everything has to have a purpose or a clear goal at the end. And I think that the most intuitive way to access anything energetically or spiritually is to go in without that expectation and to sit in the like freedom of it all. But again, back to our point, like that freedom and that anything could come through feels terrifying for some of us.
Yes, absolutely. Really, yeah.
Yeah. So doing it in ways that feel soft and creative and kind to yourself first, so that when you are on the roller coaster, you can register, oh, this is me choosing a big, expansive, exciting life, not a small, limiting, fearful life. So I work with that in the book of these ideas of like, let's rewrite it. Let's rewrite the narrative slightly. Let's shift the mindset slightly to see what it expands for us, what it opens up for us as far as opportunity. And like I mentioned, those two practices are some examples of accessing a flow state with no clear end goal in mind and letting it be a way of processing.
So you have a, like, I want to get into the book a little bit more, but I also have to note, like, you've done some readings with some pretty big names and some, like, a lot of my friends have just sworn up and down about you. How did you, when it comes into, has it been very word of mouth when it comes to like your work and with other people? Because I swear to God, I saw your name 3 times in a single week of people just up and down singing your praises around an individual reading. And I thought that was very cool because like one of them was in California, one of them was in Nova Scotia. And I was like, oh, this is wild. Like you really have, you've really created a community, but also like this trust in so with so many people. How did you get into like really actively doing this work and like how has it sort of become, is this your main career now?
Yeah, this is everything since the past 4 years now.
Wow.
I've been primarily focusing on psychic work, psychic readings, holding that space. I've taught courses and shared how to activate your intuition and your clairs, your psychic senses. So it's gone through a couple stages, but right now my work is really just based in the one-on-one because it's my favorite part. It's so intimate, it's so sacred, and I never get bored with it because I find our story so fascinating. And you're right, it has been through word of mouth and trust. And what's funny is like, I'm not the psychic for everyone. My style is not for everyone. And I recognize that, but I'm so lucky. And I really double down on really accepting and appreciating with such gratitude the clients who vouch for me and who say like, no, really, like she's a source that you can go to and someone to trust. Because, you know, without going down this rabbit hole of the spiritual side and the community as a whole, there's a lot of interesting readers out there, right? There's a lot that the power dynamics and the way that it can start to get very dependent on a reader, that's something I feel very strongly against. So just finding ways to make sure that my client always feels empowered, walking away, feels supported, feels clear, not more confused and not overwhelmed by everything that needs to happen. Because that creates kind of a cycle sometimes of the guru energy. Like I know and I have information you don't. And I think my clients, luckily, fortunately, can feel how I don't try to do that. Mm-hmm. And they appreciate that. So we maintain that relationship.
Talk to me about what are the biggest hurdles is when it comes to this work and the way that people view you, and maybe some of the more, like, I'm a skeptic, but I still love the reading. But what are like some of the bigger things that you find are difficult in terms of getting over that hurdle of maybe just like you said, just like not just the judgment, but just like the witness of other people who have maybe, you know, titled themselves psychic, but do a very different way of things, or do tarot readings, but activated a different way. I mean, it's like, I feel so bad saying this, but it's like having one bad experience with a dentist and then calling them all bad. Like I get that, like, sometimes people just have these experiences, or it just comes from, maybe it comes from a faith standpoint of just like a belief system and things like that, which I super respect. But what have been sort of like the biggest hurdles for you in terms of this as a career, and like sort of that, like that judgment, maybe from your family or with friends and things like that? Mm-hmm.
What started as a sort of fear of like how I was representing myself, or the energy that other people were picking up on when I started sharing what I do, rather than worrying about changing that, I really doubled down on where I was feeling the most ease and the most alignment, which was with the people I was working with. And I had to kind of compartmentalize and realize, like, my personal belief as far as my work as an individual is that I'm not here to disrupt the industry at large or fix it. And I think that was a huge weight. And it's why my work really revolves around inner work, inner dialogue, personal reflection, personal storytelling, because that we do have control over, right? Is our experience with me, myself, and I. And so if I was going to be sharing that with my clients and sharing it through the lens of tarot cards or anything else, I had to do it. So the first couple of years of my work, I really tried to just not feed into the noise as best I could. Easier said than done. And just stay in my lane, stay with my clients, build that respect between me and them. Now at this point, I feel more grounded and more clear on what my voice as a psychic is meant to sound like. I know who I am and I know who I'm not. So when I get in those situations, I was actually speaking to my fiance about this recently. People don't say the same things that they used to a couple years ago, like those kind of like passive aggressive little, when they meet me for the first time, like, oh, are you reading me right now? Like, no, I'm not. And they don't say it anymore, because I think energetically I'm presenting with more clarity within myself and more confidence. And it took a while, but I think at this point I'm really rooted in, this is the style I am, and this is what I choose to lean into versus what people might judge or think a psychic looks like. And it creates a deeper mirror, you know, between me and the people I'm meeting now. And I think it's why my business has evolved more, because I'm just really rooted in like the truth of it.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing that I really respected when we first started it, because my whole, in terms of skepticism, is like, when you get a psychic reading, how much of it is real and how much of it is self-fulfilling prophecy, like that you just sort of manifest in your own life or make decisions based on what you've been told. And your first thing that you said to me is, I'm not so black and white, because there's still free will. And I was like, okay, so you're not going to tell me anything that's going to make me go and make some big life decision. And instead, it was just a lot of asking questions and validating certain parts and validating certain questions I had, and also just bringing a lot of clarity to the things that I've already been working through, which I felt was, like I've said this word a million times, so validating. But I think validation is very key, because it helps us activate. I mean, sometimes I realize this in just the work I'm doing online, where I get criticized for showing my belly, but I do it because I understand that that can help somebody feel validated in their body, yes, which is going to activate them potentially going and opening up more doors for themselves. It's not doing anything for me if they see my body and they feel validated by it. It's only doing stuff for them. And I felt that same way in terms of like the way that you were like, this isn't like, it's not impacting me however you do anything or what your decisions are, but ultimately like you're validating something that I'm already questioning and working through myself, so that I can feel faith in activating it for myself. And I think that's a really powerful, I just did a podcast with somebody else really recently where we talked about activations versus manifestations. And like that idea of manifesting is like, you know, wishing on a star for like a certain type of person and all of a sudden they arrive, versus like, I know the type of person that I wish to attract, and here's the steps I'm going to take to put myself in, like to activate myself into better situations. And I thought that
into
was
that vibration, almost like kind of setting yourself up to be the same as what you're attracting.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense when we look at every other avenue in our life where we're like, oh, I really want this job or I really want this opportunity, but we never apply for it or we never take the steps that we would need to take in order to get to that place. And I think that where a lot of my own like critiques of a lot of that have come from is sort of from maybe the extreme versions that we see and hear about. And I felt like this was a very grounding experience in terms of taking away some of that radical versions of everything. And like you said, it was like very soft. It's very validating. I'll say it again. It's just like brings clarity, like genuinely. I think that that was like, it just felt very, I cried so many times because it felt safe. And I think when you're scared of the future, that can be the scariest thing, is like you're holding on to so much. And sometimes just like saying it out loud to somebody can feel really healing, right? But I want to talk about the book before we wrap up, because it's coming out. By the time the podcast comes out, it's either coming out this week or it's just come out. So talk to me, what can people expect from the book, or like, you know, tapping into your work? I want to hear what sort of can be expected from it and how it can sort of help us activate in our own lives.
Yeah. So The Inner Tarot is really a book, a guidebook, a workbook, and even I dare to say it, like a tiny bit memoir, just because there is a lot of personal story weaved into the cards as well. But it's teaching the system of the tarot, so the 78 card system, the fool's journey, so to speak. So if you are a tarot newbie, you've never had a deck of cards, this is still a book that will apply to you, versus if you're someone who is very comfortable with the practice, it's a new perspective. But the cards are presented in a way that I offer embodiment practices, so ways to live your tarot. I really feel like none of this is going to make sense, this being spiritual practices, psychic work, intuitive activation, if we don't find a way to practice it in our daily lives and make it more normal. You know, it's not this this magic we can tap into here and there. It's something we can start to live and breathe and really embody. So every single card is paired with a couple practices and ways, anything from breath work to a small movement practice to a journal prompt, something to activate the energy that you're picking up on, so that as you begin pulling cards, you can start to integrate it and see it in your daily life and daily practice. The book is also divided into two parts. So part one is really just a crash course in reading cards, how to shuffle them, how to cleanse them, all the fun rituals that you can do with tarot. And then we dive into the bulk of the work and the reflection and the healing pieces in part two. So it's a pretty complete and robust experience with tarot, which is something that many people are intimidated by. It's a practice that, if you're not familiar, it has a long history. It dates back to the 15th century. There's a ton of tradition, a ton of suspicions. So it's just debunking all of that throughout the book and letting it be something that's personal to you.
That's amazing. I'm really excited for it. I think a lot of people are really curious and into it. I've had a couple friends who, you know, have picked up tarot cards and been like, oh, can I do a reading for you? And it's like just fun and sweet. And I've always appreciated that, people wanting to tap into, you know, intuition and card reading. I would love to hear, are you also still doing one-on-one sessions with people? And is there opportunity for people listening to potentially book a one-on-one with you like I just had?
Definitely. So I will always do readings because it's my favorite part of my work. I am taking a couple weeks off from my book tour, excited to travel a bit and promote the work. However, I will be offering one-on-one readings for forever and always because it's my thing. So I will definitely set you up with a link if your audience wants to check it out.
Awesome. Kate, thank you so much for everything today. This has been such an incredible experience. I literally said to my husband, I was like, I don't know what I'm about to do. And it's been really beautiful. And even for anybody who doesn't believe it, which Becky, I know you're listening, it's just so beautiful to be able to even just validate yourself through an experience like this. I think that's really cool. So where can everyone find you? Where can they find the book? Give yourself a final plug for where everyone can sort of tap into this.
For sure. So my website, katevanhorn.com, has information about my book, other resources, as well as my readings. And then Kate Van Horn on Instagram.
That's K-A-T-E Van Horn. I'll have everything in the show notes for you all as well. But thank you, Kate, so much. And
thank you, Sarah.
We're going to see everyone back next week.
well, friends. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of The Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.